It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. This year, vinyl records have outsold CDs for the first time since the 1980s. Vinyl outsold CDs by about $103 million. But physical sales just account for $375 million. For comparison, music streaming services have made $4.8 billion so far this year. Streaming accounts for about 85% of music industry revenue. Our next guest buys about two vinyl records a week. He's joining us now to break down the longevity of vinyl albums and to talk about our ever-changing musical listening habits. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you listen to most of your music? Vinyl or CD? Stream? Radio? Download? Wax cylinder? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Justin Barney is the music director at 88.9 Radio Milwaukee. He's also a host there. He hosts the show Five Songs We Can't Stop Listening To. Justin, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Rob. It's fun to be back.
Well, what is your initial reaction to the news that vinyl has now overtaken CDs for the first time in a long time?
Oh, I'm not surprised at all. I think the, you know, the vinyl, the resurgence kind of started in like 2010. And has outpaced. And the reason that vinyl is outselling CDs is because it is now a choice to buy music. You don't have to do it. streaming services, as you just said, are the number one. So if you're buying music, you're making a choice to do a thing that you don't have to do. And so people are choosing to buy vinyl records.
Were you a vinyl record guy all along here?
No. I bought a lot of CDs and had a lot of CDs for a very long time. But then, like, right when that started picking up, in 2010, 2012, I started buying albums. And then I was, like, kind of, like, buying both for a bit. And then I just transitioned to all vinyl. And I think that the reason is a big reason that I don't think a lot of us want to say is that it's cool. They look cool. They are cool. They're a foot high. The art is big. You know, it looks cool in your apartment. It's like a piece of decoration. And so it's no longer the thing that you have to get music from. When people were buying CDs, when CDs were the dominant medium, it's because streaming didn't exist. It's because CDs and records and cassettes were the only way that you could get those things. So it was more function than it was form. And now that it's more form than function, something about an album is a little romantic, you know, and it looks good. So I think that that's a big reason.
Now, I know some music people have told me, hey, the music sounds better on an album than on a CD, given, you know, comparable quality speakers and whatnot. Do you buy that?
No, not at all. I feel like that was an argument that people just said because they didn't want to say that it looks cool, because they didn't like, and there are merits to both. I mean, I have spent so much money on both things, on CD and on vinyl. And they both sound great. And I think that most people, even it's my job to listen to music. And most of the time, I don't think that I could tell the difference if you have like the same speakers and the same, it's all about like that other equipment too. So I don't buy the argument. What do you think, Rob? Do you buy CDs? Do you buy records?
You know, I do very little of CDs anymore. I do not have the technological capacity to do anything with a record.
You're apart not
from
alone
look
there.
At it. Right. Oh, no. I know a lot of people don't have things. I have a nostalgia for the days of playing vinyl. And, you know, if I had that well listened to album, knowing when the skip was coming, and sometimes, you know, when it's time to lean over and whap it a little so it doesn't get caught in the same groove. there's nostalgia there for me about vinyl. But I got to admit, not enough to justify Justin taking up the space to rebuild a record collection.
That's
so fine.
I think that's why vinyl has outpaced CDs, is because because of this choice, because I have made the decision that it is worth my time and it is worth my effort to take the space to have a gigantic shelf of records. And the people that are making the decision that you don't have to do, it is a fool's decision to buy CDs or to buy vinyl, but people like me, we cannot help ourselves. And so we are choosing to buy albums. And because of, like you said, that nostalgia for it, and there's something about it, you know, that I will choose to buy two records a week, though it is throwing money down the drain and I do not have to do it, but I love it. And I am obsessed.
We are talking about music and the ways we listen to it with the news that vinyl albums have outpaced CD sales this year for the first time since the 1980s. Justin Barney with us from Radio Milwaukee, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Want to hear your story of how you listen to music and why you do it that way. Do you stream and only stream? Did you get rid of all of your CDs and albums and tapes? Or do you still buy albums? Are you one of the people driving the sales of vinyl? Do you keep that CD collection around? Is it important to you to have that physical artifact of that music and see the cover art and all that stuff? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Okay, Justin, we've been kind of talking about vinyl versus CD. Mm-hmm. But most of us, of course, 85% of the revenue at least, is coming from people streaming online, whether they take it with ads or they pay for a streaming service, or I guess downloading is an option too. That's where the action is at.
That is where the action is at. And I would say that I probably stream most of my music. I mean, I own, you know, 600, 800 records. I don't know, a lot. And, but I stream most of my music. And, but there is, because of convenience, but there is something about looking at your collection and taking stock in it, you know, and like, this is, you're looking at you. You're looking at like your musical identity, this person that you have created. And I think that that will never go. On streaming, you can have playlists and you can like add stuff to your phone, but there's not that bit of identity in it. You know, it's not like, hey, I own all 20 Flaming Lips albums. Here they are. Let me look at them. This is who I am musically, and this is who I am as a person. You can't super get that on streaming, but there's no problem with doing both. But there are those physical things that I think are the real draw. And one of the things that I love the most is going to the record store. Mm. There is nothing better than going to the record store. I love record store culture because I have a Rushmore here in Bayview. I live where I do because of its direct proximity to the record store. And I'll go in, and when you go into a record store, you know that these are the same fools that you are. These are the same people that have decided to do this foolish thing and pay for records because we love music and we want to go in and we want to talk about it and we want to be among people that are like us. So I think as long as there are people that really kind of like love music in that way and want to go to the record store, and even if you don't fully, you know, want to commit to that or like be as obsessive as I am, I think the idea of supporting it is good enough, but I really love those like tactile and those very real connections in the real world.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Mark is with us in East Troy. Mark, hi.
Hi guys. Great show. To let you know, I've been buying records probably since 1980 or thereabouts. Okay. And then kind of changed to compact discs in the late 80s. But just over the weekend, I started looking at some hi-fi stuff and am thinking about going back to picking up a turntable. And I have a few albums that I've kept probably since 1980, but I'm thinking of buying more. And like your guest said, I mean, I love buying CDs. I love buying records. So the more I can do that, the happier I'll be.
And Mark, I got to ask you, what albums have you hung on to, even ones that you couldn't listen to until you get that new turntable? What was so important that you kept it all these years?
Well, probably one of the first records I bought, I was pretty young, but I bought Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon, which is just a phenomenal, I think, in my humble opinion, that is perhaps the second greatest album ever recorded. But, of course, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, and definitely Street Survivors by the Lynyrd Skynyrd Band.
Ooh, okay, Mark, thank you so much for sharing that with us. There's also Pink Floyd, that's one of the most bought albums over the years and one of the most posted posters over the years, too, I think, Justin. I don't know, hanging onto those albums, it took me a long time, I got to say, after I had a turntable to give up on those last, 20, 30 albums I still had. I finally got
You gave them away, Rob?
I did.
What'd you do,
I gave them to people. Like, I had this awesome four Zappa album collection, and I got a guitarist in my band loves Zappa, so he's going to listen to it. God. I'm going to let it collect dust.
That's good, because I have been the grateful recipient of many people who are in your same position who are like, I've got these things. Who would appreciate this? Because you could, because like I was saying before, like it's a part of your identity, you know? And it's like, this is you, and you want to pass it down to someone who will get it like you do, you know? Like who loves Zappa like you love Zappa. And so I'm for giving it to people that love that, because I've been on that receiving end too. And that's very nice.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Justin Barney, music director at 88.9 Radio Milwaukee. Vinyl records have outsold CDs for the first time since the mid-1980s. We're talking about the longevity of vinyl and the ways we access music in 2020. You can share your story at 800-642-1234. Do you still buy vinyl records? Have you been sticking with them all along? Have you gone back and forth between albums and CDs? Or are you streaming only? Maybe you even purged the collection, like a lot of people have. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation with 88.9 Radio Milwaukee's music director, Justin Barney, about how vinyl records have outsold CDs for the first time since the mid-1980s. We want to hear your story of how you listen to music, maybe how it's changed over the years. Did you go albums to CDs to streaming, back to albums, or anything like that in any order? What do you do now? Do you stream? Do you download? Do you buy CDs, keep CDs, or have you gotten rid of them all? Call 800-642-1234. Oh, hey, we have full phone lines, so let's talk to more people. Kathy is with us in Eau Claire. Kathy, hi.
Hello. I'm excited about your topic today. We still have lots of our old albums and do play them. But a few years ago, we purchased a jukebox, an old 1963 jukebox that we love. And so we've collected some 45s, but oftentimes, you know, you've got to avoid those with scratches and this and that. I'm just wondering if you're noticing an increase in the 45 vinyl also, and where it's a good good company to, or some companies to find what I'm looking for.
Well, hold on there, Kathy. Where does one buy a 1963 jukebox?
It was a man who also loves jukeboxes started collecting a few, and he had two of the same and swapped out parts and made one that works wonderfully. So
what a find, Kathy.
That was fun. Yep.
Thank you so much. Wow, 45s. Can one easily find those, Justin, as a denizen of record stores?
Oh, I bought a 45 last week.
You did?
You can find them, but 45s are not as they're not as popular. 45s like were the most popular before like LPs became big. So like in the 50s and 60s, 45s were, I mean, they're singles, you know? So it was like streaming before streaming. You know, you'd buy a 45 of your favorite song that you heard on the radio. And then once albums took over, that kind of, and the large like conceptual concept of an album, albums really became the thing. And as we're talking, like the percentage of people that buy albums are low, and you don't make a, artists don't make a ton of money on mm-hmm. albums. And so, releasing a 45 or having a record label release a 45, it just doesn't make a lot of financial sense for them, because if you're going to listen to one song, it's a task to play a 45, unless you have a jukebox.
Thank you so much.
That's amazing.
That's so. Yeah. That's a great story. I invite us all over when you can invite people over again. Back to your calls now. Deborah is on the line in Brown Deer. Deborah, hi.
Hello. I would like to tell you of a memory of 1974 sitting at Greg and Joey's house. Joey is Josephine on Lake Superior, and we were listening to the White Album, the Beatles White Album, and I read the album while we were listening to it, and I fell in love with the song Martha, My Dear, who a song Paul wrote for his dog Martha.
Uh-huh.
And so there's a value to albums as far as, well, there's information in there, and if you read it, it's really valuable to connecting with the song. But I think any way you listen to music, it's like medicine.
Deborah, thank you so much. What a great story. That power of listening to music to take us back clearly to a time and place and old friends. And the physical artifact there is part of that story for Deborah, Justin, and reading the liner notes, reading the lyrics that you could get along with the album.
Oh my God, that's one of mine too. So this, oh God, it's embarrassing. But the thing that I have done the most recently is I've been going back and buying original pressings of albums, which is even more costly and even more futile. But I bought a copy of the Flaming Lips 1986 album, Here It Is, the original pressing. And the original pressing has a poster in it, and it has the phone number of Wayne Coyne's girlfriend at the time, who was running their booking. And it says, and it had a phone number, and it says, if her brother picks up, don't even waste your time. It's the phone will get answered when hell freezes over. It says that on the liner notes of the album. And it's like, that's the only place you'd ever find that. And that is, it's such a gem buried in the record. Liner notes are the best parts about a vinyl record.
Did you call the number, Justin?
You know, I should. Why didn't I?
Thanks a lot for the call, Deborah. We are talking about how we listen to music. Justin Barney with us from Radio Milwaukee. Back to your calls now. Rick is with us in Madison. Rick, hi. Oop, Rick, are you there?
Garrett is.
Oh, Garrett. Okay, let's go with Garrett in Madison. Hi. Sorry about
that.
How
are you doing?
Good. What do you want to tell us about?
As I was telling the person that originally answered the phone call, I'm well into my 60s. I grew up with vinyl, as that was pretty much the only option out there other than live. I've never given up on it. I did get into CDs some. What? I ended up buying a CD recorder and recorded my albums onto CDs simply because a lot of the old blues albums that I have weren't available or were cost prohibitive for purchasing. I think very well of vinyl. I belong to a number of Facebook groups dealing with vinyl, and as I posted earlier today, a Folkways album of Memphis Slim, and the Folkways albums used to include brochure or these descriptive notes is what they called them. Anywhere from 4 to 8, 12 pages long, that would tell about the history of the artist, the meanings of the songs, as well as the lyrics and those who accompanied them. I just have to say that vinyl is my preferred format, and I am very happy to see it outselling CDs.
Garrett, thanks a lot for the call. And it sounds like a great collection. And yes, sometimes you didn't just get lyrics or a little who played what. Some of these came with essays, either educational or artistic or what have you, Justin.
Well, Folkways is a project of the Smithsonian. So those records are so good because they are like designed to be like preservative artifacts. And the Folkways records are so good. They always come with like a photo and they got like a matte finish on them. And then they have those brochures that are put together by like research historians that are, you know, this is their project is preserving music through vinyl. Those are treasures. I own a bunch of those too.
Thanks a lot for that call. We'll go to Robert now in Plymouth. Robert, hi.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for taking the call.
What do you want to tell us about?
I want to tell you that for 25 years, I hosted house concerts and a folk music series in Plymouth. And back then, a lot of the artists had to produce on cassette tapes. And I just bought an old used car that has a cassette player in it. And I haven't been able to listen to these for two decades. And
you kept
Wisconsin-based them. Wisconsin-based folk artist, yeah.
Fantastic, Robert. Thank you so much. Well, the experience of Justin trying to use that pencil to re-thread the cassette when it came unstrung in there for you, that was something. I finally purged mine in a garage sale years ago. Do you hang on to cassettes at all, Justin?
I got them all, baby. I got cassettes. I got CDs. I got LPs. Wax cylinders, a couple.
You do have wax cylinders?
There's a place in Milwaukee, Musical Memories, and it's like an underground record store. Like half of it is like submerged. It's such a
literally.
Great place. Literally. And they've got some wax cylinders that, you know, it's a fun thing to have.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for that call. And Justin, that's all the time we have. Thanks a lot. It's been a lot of fun.
Oh, my God. Thank you, Rob.
That's Justin Barney, music director at 88.9 Radio in Milwaukee. Weekend host there. Hosts the show Five Songs We Can't Stop Listening To. Been talking about how we listen to music, based in part on the news that vinyl outsold CDs this year so far, at least for the first time since the 1980s. Thanks to all of you for your calls and great stories, and to everybody who is still on the line. We didn't have time for you, but thank you so much for calling in. Coming up after the news, we want to hear from you again. We're going to have a little more fun as we get closer to the availability of pumpkin spice treats with this fall. We're seeing more and more of them over the years. What do you think about the pumpkin spice phenomenon? Does it get you excited for fall? I've had colleagues at WPR who mark their calendars for the release of pumpkin spice whatever. Or do you think it's gone overboard? Or do you think it's overrated? You can get started now. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also tweet us at Central Time WPR. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a Homeland Security official has filed a whistleblower complaint saying he was told to make intelligence reports on Russian campaign interference aligned with President Trump's position. We'll find out what else is in the complaint and the reaction it's gotten so far in Congress. First, as we round the corner into the fall season, you may be seeing more pumpkin spice food and drinks and other things available. In 2003, Starbucks released the now famous or infamous pumpkin spice latte. Since then, it seems like you can get just about anything pumpkin spiced. A quick online search shows pumpkin spice cookies. That makes sense. Pumpkin spice cereal. Even pumpkin spice deodorant and pumpkin spice sparkling water. So we wanted to have a little fun and check in with you about this. Call in now at 800-642-1234. What is your stance on pumpkin spice? Does it get you excited for the fall? Do you eagerly look forward to pumpkin spice? Fill in the blank. Is it one of the ways you mark the season? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. On the other hand, if you are over the whole thing, if you think it's gone too far, it's overrated in the first place, do you think these things hit the shelves too early? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also tweet us at Central Time WPR, where we've tweeted an amusing post on the topic. I myself, in kind of outside of the debate, I have a weird thing with cinnamon. not exactly an allergy. You may have heard me talk about this before. So pumpkin spice anything is off limits to me. So I'm a neutral arbiter on this one. I have an enthusiast with us, though. Our technical director, Sarah Hopeful, is a pretty big fan, I understand. Hey, Sarah.
Hello. Yes, I'm a fan. I mean, you can't go wrong. It just reminds me of a pie, and it just reminds me of like fall. And I don't care that people think it's basic. It tastes good, and I stand by that.
And you went off in a quest for one recently, I understand?
I did. Yesterday was my birthday, and Starbucks has the thing where you can get a free birthday latte or a free birthday drink of your choice. And I looked all over my apartment for my Starbucks card. I have no idea what my email address it was associated with. I had my shoes on, ready to go. Could not find it, did not get the free latte, and did not go to pay for it.
So are you going to, do you have this on your calendar now to go and get one at the next available opportunity?
Absolutely. I feel a pumpkin spice latte is the start of fall. I do it every year, multiple times. Not every day because it does get really sugary, but I enjoy it. I it's a good time.
Hold on for a sec, Sarah. I want to let people get a chance to call in here at 800-642-1234. Are you like Sarah? You go off in search of pumpkin spice lattes or what have you? Or do you think it's overrated, too much hype, too much out there? Call in now at 800-642-1234. Or do you think pumpkin spice belongs where it really belongs, in a pumpkin pie? Call in at 800-642-1234. 1234. That's 800-642-1234. Sarah, before I let you go, do you have to put up with mockery? I've worked with people who are big fans of pumpkin spice and were mocked by others for it.
I do. Most specifically to WPR, former host John Munson used to give me some stuff for that. But my favorite fun fact about pumpkin spice is that there's no pumpkin in it. That is
right.
And that if you tell people that, some of them are surprised. There's no pumpkin in pumpkin spice. It's just the spices to make pumpkin taste like pie.
And yeah, I cook a lot with pumpkin, and pumpkin by itself tastes nothing like pumpkin spice. It's all the cinnamon stuff. Yep. Do you bake pumpkin pie in the season, Sarah?
Not once, but I will happily have my pumpkin spice latte.
All right. Thanks so much, Sarah. Now it is your turn at 800-642-1234, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. What is your verdict on the pumpkin spice phenomenon that has swept the nation over the last, I don't know, decade or so? Join in with your opinions at 800-642-1234. Producer Bill Martins gives a tip: when ordering that pumpkin spice latte, get it with only half as much syrup as they normally put in. Otherwise, the bottom is disgustingly sweet. You can't finish it. 50% syrup is spot on perfect. Let's go to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Dan is with us in Appleton. Dan, hi.
Hi, how are you guys today?
Pretty good, Dan. What is your stance on this important issue?
I am a anti-pumpkin spice person. I owned a coffee shop for 12 and a half years, and September, October, the beginning of November was kind of the I feared it and I loathed it. So we used it. It just, I can't stand the smell. I can't stand the taste. So you hit a nerve here today. So, one of the reasons I sold my business is because of pumpkin spice latte.
Wow. That's hardcore. So I got to ask how you approached this, Dan. Did you give in and cater to the whims of the people coming in and demanding the pumpkin spice?
Customer is always right, but in the back we had a sign that says we now have pumpkin spice motor oil. So it just got to that point that it's like, oh goodness, here comes another one. So
all right, Dan, I got to ask before I let you go: do you have a favorite, blended coffee concoction, or are you a purist? It's only the straight stuff.
I'm a purist because we also sold flavor coffees, and I like my coffee as it is, black, a little cream. If I do a latte or a cappuccino, maybe a little bit of caramel or vanilla, but that's coffee is made to be drank like it is.
All right. Thank you so much for that call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Talking about pumpkin spice latte, tis the season. And you can share your thoughts. Tweet us at Central Time WPR. Let us know what you think about public spice. I want to call back to our previous conversation about how we listen to music before we go to our break here. We had somebody on Twitter comment. We heard from a listener who had bought a jukebox, and we have a Twitter comment. I actually still play jukeboxes in bars. Yeah, that's a good point. But can you find the CD ones or the digital-only ones? Or are you still finding ones that actually play 45s? I'd love to hear a follow-up on that tweet. Hey, share your thoughts on both of these topics. The best ways to listen to music, your attitude toward pumpkin spice in all its forms. Tweet us at Central Time WPR. Coming up, a Homeland Security official says he was pressured to make intelligence reports on Russia match up with President Trump's public comments. We'll get the details from a national security reporter. That's coming up next here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up at 6, Africa lost more than 90% of its artifacts to looters over the decades. Will Western museums give in to increasing pressure to send those artifacts back? Hear the story today at 6 on 1A+. Now, a whistleblower in the U.S. Department of Homeland Security says he was repeatedly pressured by his superiors to make changes to intelligence reports on Russian election interference to more closely align with what President Trump had been saying. That official, Brian Murphy, says he refused to do so and was demoted as a result. Democrats in Congress are calling attention to his report, saying they want official testimony and answers from the people involved. Olivia Beavers is a reporter covering national security and Congress for The Hill. Olivia, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks, Rob, for having me.
Well, tell us first about the whistleblower himself, Brian Murphy, the central character in the story.
Certainly. So Brian Murphy is a career official who has been in government for decades, at least two decades. And he was serving as the acting undersecretary in the Department of Homeland Security's Office of Intelligence and Analysis. And during that time, he started making multiple disclosures, and which was laid out in this whistleblower complaint that's come to light recently, and basically was saying that there were multiple cases in which top politically appointed officials pressured him to change this vetted intelligence, and make it so that it was either supporting or matching what President Trump had said, whether it was on Antifa and other sort of extremist groups, whether it was on Russia and interference, which was probably the most, bombshell kind of allegation in this complaint, was that he was being asked to modify intelligence to focus more on China and Iran and move away from Russian interference. And so basically he's saying that multiple times over the course of 2 years, he was having officials pressure him to change this intelligence. And he, because he refused to do so, was later demoted. And now he's seeking to blow the whistle.
Now, being a whistleblower is a formal process, as many of us learned during the impeachment investigation and trial earlier. That was this year. This is a little different. The central figure in that one was an anonymous whistleblower. This one is non-anonymous, out in the public. What is involved in that process for blowing the whistle here?
Well, certainly. So part of the process is that, and this is what Brian Murphy did when he saw something that he thought was wrong, he went to these certain responsible managers, as they're called, ROMs, and he also went to the Inspector General at DHS to make raise concerns about stuff that he saw that what he was witnessing. And, with intelligence, there's also this whole other added component to whistleblower complaints, because there had to be a mechanism for them to share what was happening within the intelligence community without disclosing classified information. So as you brought up, there was a whistleblower complaint with the impeachment inquiry. Some of the lawyers representing that anonymous whistleblower are representing this whistleblower. But what they do then is there's a determination whether the information, the complaint, should be shared with Congress, whether it's urgent and whether it's also vetted enough to be sent to Capitol Hill. And then this one was sent to Capitol Hill. It was received by the Intelligence Committee leaders as well as other members across Congress. And so, as you said, Democrats are looking to hear from Murphy and they're trying to gain more information. And honestly, there's so many parallels from this time last year when the impeachment inquiry was just getting underway with that whistleblower, that the one big difference that I think is sort of looming in the background that wasn't there before is the election that's coming up.
Now let's get into the content a little more. You mentioned that one thread of this had to do with Russian interference in the U.S. election. And there was that leaked report that made news. I believe it was leaked a while back that seemed to put Russia on an even par with China and Iran when it came to attempts to interfere in the U.S. election. That caught some people by surprise. And the whistleblower, Brian Murphy, said it should have been seen as surprising. What do we know about what kind of changes he says he was asked to make?
Murphy says that from his understanding, the intelligence does not support basically this, what he called narrative that the administration is spinning, that Russia and China are on equal footing in terms of their interference activities in the U.S. election. But as you pointed out, there was also, it wasn't leaked, a top U.S. intelligence official has come out and he has said that Russia is interfering and they're working to help President Trump. And then they also said that Iran prefers that Donald Trump does not win re-election. And so Democrats have also been very critical about that, this pattern of the administration putting out information that lumps together Russia, Iran, and China. And so this was just another indicator to Democrats like House Intelligence Chairman Schiff that the administration, as he's claimed, is trying to muddy the narrative and move away from this Russian interference because of the president's ego.
And Olivia, before we move on to some of the response mm-hmm. in Congress and from Homeland Security, who are some of the figures that Murphy named in his whistleblower allegations?
Sure. So it's the current top acting DHS secretary, which is Chad Wolf. He named the former secretary, Kirstjen Nielsen. And then he also named the number two at DHS, which is Ken Cuccinelli, and several others who were chiefs of staff or below these leaders as basically speaking to modify and alter intelligence.
We're talking to Olivia Beavers, a reporter covering national security and the Congress for The Hill, talking about whistleblower allegations from a Department of Homeland Security official saying that he had faced political pressure to change intelligence reports on foreign interference in U.S. elections and on the risk of different domestic groups here in the U.S. and faced retaliation when he didn't do that. Olivia, what has been the response from the Department of Homeland Security itself and officials there?
Sure. So the Department of Homeland Security is denying any wrongdoing by the acting DHS Secretary, Chad Wolf. And they recently, yesterday, sent a letter and said basically that they had been cooperating with the Intelligence Committee, the House Intelligence Committee, on its investigation into social unrest and protests in Portland, Oregon. But they are not going to accommodate Schiff's witness request for 11 additional witnesses in this expanded probe. And it was, you know, if you read sort of between the lines, they were sort of needling Schiff, saying that he didn't lay out he might not have jurisdiction over some of these witnesses, that it was an overly broad probe, and that the Inspector General of the DHS is already investigating it. And so they asked him to reconsider his investigation. And Schiff took this in response and said that the top brass at the Department of Homeland Security are trying to avoid scrutiny and that's why they're not fully cooperating with his committee. So you're basically seeing, again, this headbutt between the administration and Congress led by Democrats who are trying to get more information, and the administration says this is just essentially, as we saw in the impeachment inquiry, what they call a witch hunt. So already we're seeing them clash as Democrats try to move forward with this investigation.
And you were pointing toward what Democrats in Congress are doing there. What specifically are they asking for from Homeland Security in terms of bringing people in to testify? Did they have a timeline in mind during which they'd want to do that kind of a hearing and investigation?
Well, Next Monday, they're hoping to bring Murphy in. And so that is something that, you know, that might light the fire for Democrats to push even harder for this investigation, because in the whistleblower complaint, there were multiple times where it said this information is classified, but we can only sort of give you the top line that he was pressed to change and alter something related to Russian interference. And so that's something that we might see as a catalyst moving forward, is if when Murphy testifies behind closed doors, is coming Monday. And they have also sought to set up 11 additional interviews. And that's something that I'm going to be curious to watch, whether they're able to get that within, you know, the next month or so, or even if just one or two decide to break with the administration and testify, as we saw somewhat in the impeachment inquiry. But I'm not sure how that's entirely going to play out. Now, I do want to quickly highlight, Rob, that there's been a lot of sort of the Republicans on the right pointing out that about a month ago, Intelligence Chairman Schiff was accusing basically Murphy of hiding intelligence related to activities of DHS collecting intelligence on reporters related to unrest in Portland, Oregon. And so Schiff has said that this is the perfect opportunity for them to clear up any, you know, information and have clarifications on what Murphy's involvement was with that and what the DHS was doing.
Now, in some ways, the whistleblower accusations sound kind of like a big deal. But on the other hand, it fits, I think, into each party's narrative. Democrats will say, aha, President Trump is downplaying Russian efforts here. Republicans will respond, aha, another career government official trying to interfere with the Trump administration. Politically, as far as the fallout for voters, say this might be a wash.
Exactly. I mean, I don't think that this is the number one issue in people's minds with coronavirus and, you know, not too long after the impeachment inquiry wrapped. And I don't think that Democrats are going to really be able to make too much leeway in the election year when all the focus is them getting their candidate elected and whether Republicans can get President Trump back in the Oval Office for a second term. So I think there are two major issues that are already sort of on the top of people's minds. So this might not be the number one thing captivating them like it might have this time last year.
I want to take a few moments, Olivia, before we run out of time to touch on a new story today. The U.S. Department of Justice launching a criminal probe. Do I have this right? Into John Bolton's book for potentially disclosing classified info. Give us the Cliff's Notes version. What's going on?
Sure. So this is something that we sort of saw building up earlier this year after Bolton went ahead and published his book. The White House sought to temporarily block him from publishing his book, claiming that he had included classified information. You know, they don't point out exactly what that is, but they're claiming that that was included in his book, and they sought to prevent him from publishing it. Bolton's side, however, is arguing that they were just trying to prevent his book from being published because it didn't paint the administration in an entirely flattering light. So now, you know, I've confirmed it was first reported by the New York Times, and a source has confirmed for me that there is this investigation, and they have subpoenaed Bolton's publisher for records related to communication about his book. And this is basically a pretty big escalation of them going after a former White House national security advisor and trying to prove if he included classified information in his memoir.
Olivia, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks, Rob.
That's Olivia Beavers, reporter at The Hill, looking at a whistleblower complaint from a Homeland Security official. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, in the midst of national protests, a guest makes the case that there is not a significant outbreak of police shootings of Black people. From the candidates' responses to wildfires to the latest polling numbers, we'll get the latest big news in national politics. And don't call it a comeback. It's been here for years, but a lot more people are getting into sewing during the pandemic. We'll find out how and why. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Yesterday on Central Time, we had a fun conversation with an educator from South Carolina who replaced the usual icebreaker, tell us something interesting about yourself, with the question, tell us something boring about yourself. He got some fun responses, so did we. One caller told us that he brushes his teeth in the shower. We asked around here at WPR and PBS Wisconsin here some more boring facts about the people working at Wisconsin Public Radio. Muna Algathy is an education engagement specialist. Muna says, I can't listen to full songs. I'll enjoy a song for around 2.5 minutes before I need to change it. Susanna Michaels in our fundraising team says, a full refrigerator makes me antsy. I love it when it empties out at the end of the week. Lori Skelton, music host and Food Friday contributor, still owns a flip phone. Ezra Wall, our regional manager in Southwest Wisconsin, says, at 42, I moved back with my parents temporarily, but turns out we're all perfectly happy with the arrangement. Andy Soth, PBS Wisconsin producer, says, this is a good one. I like looking out for out-of-state license plates. New Mexico is my favorite. Alaska is a great catch. The ultimate is Hawaii. Like, how did that happen? My excitement is rising, Andy says, even as I write this, so I can't really believe it's a boring fact, but experience shows that other people do. A lot of fun, boring facts about people. Share yours. Tweet us at Central Time WPR. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.